This is Beyond Words with Dr. William Campbell, awakening the world to the power of God's Word. And now here is your host, Dr. William Campbell.
Welcome to Beyond Words Radio, where it's our ambition to move beyond simply talking about Christian doctrine and great thoughts to living more like Christ. Now, it's interesting as we seek to live this way in a culture that has such great Christian heritage and yet seems to be drifting so far from its roots. And what we're doing today under the topic, The Rise of the Tyrant, we're talking about the dangers that might be just around the corner for this great republic, this nation that helped promote freedom on the world scene because of choices we're making as a people reflected in our government. And the person that I thought would be just great for this topic is William J. Federer. Bill's been with us on the program before, and he's actually written a 2-volume series. The first one titled Change to Chains, and the second, The Rise of the Tyrant. And so, Bill, I want us to start off with this first part of your series, and I'm hoping our listeners are going to really hold on with us as we get into a lot of meaty and important subjects. So thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Bill, how did you come to want to write these books? As you explain it, say a word about yourself. Let the listeners know who you are.
Well, I've written about 20 books on American history, world history. One of them sold 500,000 copies, called America's God and Country Encyclopedia Quotations, and do a daily TV show called Faith and History that airs on the TCT network on DirecTV. And then I do a daily radio spot called American Minute, airs on stations across the country. Ran for Congress several times, didn't win, but came close, and I go around the country and speak. And also sent out a daily email called American Minute, something that happened on each date in history. As far as this topic, after researching and writing for 30 years, we get to see patterns. And the Founding Fathers kept expressing how unique America was. We've heard the saying, America's the greatest country in the world. You know, and I thought, well, you know, I'm going to prove it. And so I decided to research every civilization that's ever existed on the planet. And I found some interesting things. The first human records appear about 3 or 4,000 BC in Sumerian cuneiform in clay tablets in the Mesopotamian Valley. Today, that's Iraq. So they would take a stick and poke it in clay, make a little marking. That was the beginning of writing around 3 or 4,000 BC. We're around 2080, so 4-2, that's around 6,000 years of records. And in a sense, 6,000 years is not that long. It's just 60 people living 100 years each back to back. Right? 60 times 100 is 6,000. So everyone's met someone who's lived 100 years. Maybe a grandmother, or at least close to 100 years. So we're talking 60 grandmothers, and you're all the way back to the beginning of recorded human history. So it's not that long. But what's the record show? What's the most common form of government? Well, let's see. 2,000 years, 33 major Egyptian dynasties ruled by pharaohs who own the land, the people, the cattle. 5,000 years, 18 major Chinese dynasties ruled by emperors, and they would have 2,000 concubines, and they'd, you know, have an army of 100,000 tearing walls down around cities. And you had Chandragupta and these Indian Maharajas in India. And then you had Nebuchadnezzar and Cyrus of Persia and Darius and Alexander the Great and the Roman Caesars and the Byzantine emperors and the Muslim sultans and the African chieftains and King Kamehameha's and finally the global empires of the King of France and King of Spain and ultimately the King of England. The King of England literally had the largest empire that the planet had seen. 13 million square miles, 500,000,000 people. All of India, a quarter of the world's population right there, Australia, New Zealand, Hong Kong, British Guiana, Canada, and America. And when our founders get a chance to break away, they want to run as far away from a king as possible. And so they decided to flip it and make the people the king. And so I decided to go back and research where they got their ideas. And the situation is, where there's a king, if you're friends with the king, you're more equal. If you're not friends with the king, you're less equal. And if you're an enemy of the king, you're dead or you're a slave. And this concentrating goes back, I believe, to the fall in the garden and selfishness coming into the human DNA and Cain killing Abel. And so you put some babies in a playpen. One of them takes the rattle from the others. You put some kids in a playground. One of them is the bully hogging the ball. Put some junior high girls in a clique, and one of them is the diva. You put some people in the woods. One of them is the Indian chief. You put them in an inner city. One of them is the gang leader. And sort of like the Lord of the Rings, that movie, you know, Gandalf tells Frodo, the ring wants to get back to its master. It wants to be found. Power wants to concentrate. And it's like a fractal, that geometric design that repeats on ever-growing scales, you know, where they have it on a small, then do a computer calculations, and they'd have a big one that's made up of gazillion little small ones, and then it gets... And so what happened in the Tower of Babel, right? Nimrod concentrates the power defiantly against God, and then God scatters it. And so it's like every generation tries to rebuild the Tower of Babel, and it keeps getting on a bigger and bigger scale. You know, Sargon of Akkadia conquers from the Mediterranean to the Persian Gulf. And then I mentioned the Roman Caesars. And then there's, you know, Attila the Hun. Genghis Khan in the 1200s conquers from Korea to Hungary, kills 30 million people. And so it's like there's something in it that wants to eventually have a global empire that controls the world under one dictator that dominates everybody's life. Anyway, so America's founders didn't like the concentrated power thing. People say, well, we don't have kings today. Well, yeah, we just call them communist dictators, right? Mm-hmm. So every communist country has a king, a dictator, Stalin, Pol Pot, Ho Chi Minh, Castro, Mao Zedong, Kim Jong-un in North Korea. And the communist party members are the new royalty. They get to live in the nice houses and special shops, and the people are the peasants. So they just have a monarchy remake, but it's the same thing, power concentrating into the hands of one person. Anyway, so what I did is I studied where America got its ideas from, and I think the listeners will find it fascinating.
You put so much information into one volume, and really two volumes as you look at the whole series. So let's go back to what we have here in America. What you're saying is this is something very rare if we look at the world scene. Is that right?
Right. Here's Daniel Webster was a Secretary of State in the early 1800s. He said, miracles do not cluster, and what has happened once in 6,000 years may not happen again. Hmm. Hold on to the Constitution, for if the American Constitution should fail, there will be anarchy throughout the world. Another is a quote from James Wilson. He signed the Declaration and the Constitution. He said, after a period of 6,000 years since creation, the United States exhibit to the world the first instance of a nation assembling voluntarily and deciding that system of government under which they should live. So these gentlemen thought something really, really unique happened right here in America.
Yeah, it's something called a republic. What is the basis for our republic? You know, you talk about the idea of power corrupting and this effort to take control of everything. What's the idea of the republic? Where'd it come from?
Well, in the republic is the people are king, ruling through their representatives. So you have, in Europe and in most of history, you had kings, right? They called the divine right of kings. The creator gives the power to the king, and he dispenses it to the people. I mean, here's Louis the 14th, the Sun King of France, because his subjects were planets that revolved around him. He said, I am the state. And then he said, it is legal because I wish it. Lo and behold, the law is just the king's will forced on everybody. James I of England said, kings are God's lieutenant upon earth. They sit upon God's throne. The king is the overlord of the whole land, master over every person, having power over the life and death of everyone. And so America just didn't like that. And so they did a republic where the people are the king and we rule through our public servants. We're the ones sitting on the throne. Collectively, we decide what's going to happen. And so when somebody dishonors the flag, what they're saying is, I don't want to be the king anymore.
Mm,
like, hello, okay, somebody else will take over. And so it's fascinating how the founders look back to where these ideas came from. They look back to the colonial founding of America, most notably New England. And New England was unique because it was founded by pastors and churches. And so you had Pastor Roger Williams founded Providence, Rhode Island, in the First Baptist Church in America. Pastor John Lothrop founded Barnstable, Massachusetts. Pastor John Wheelwright founded Exeter, New Hampshire. Pastor John Cotton and his church helped establish Boston. And there's a Pastor Thomas Hooker and his church founded Connecticut. Matter of fact, this is 100 years before the Age of Enlightenment in Europe. And Thomas Hooker is in Massachusetts. It's a little strict, and so he tells the church, he says, okay, everybody meet next Saturday in the parking lot. We're going to leave. And they can take their wagons and oxen, and they go through the wilderness, and they found Hartford, Connecticut. And the church members come to him, and they say, Pastor, how do we do the government thing? So he gives a sermon in 1638. The foundation of authority is laid firstly in the free consent of the people. Simple, revolutionary. Because in Europe, the foundation of all authority was the king getting his power from God and him being God's lieutenant and dispensing it. So it's a change. Is it a top-down government or is it a bottom-up government? A republic is a bottom-up government. So his sermon was turned into the fundamental orders of Connecticut. And it became the constitution for the colony all the way up until 1818. So even when Connecticut switched from a colony to a state, they continued to use this pastor's sermon as their government. And the statue of Thomas Hooker is in the Hartford Capitol in Connecticut, and he's holding a Bible. right there on the ground, just past her. There's a plaque in England. It talks about where Thomas Hooker was raised. Founder of the state of Connecticut, father of American democracy. People realize that here is a pastor that's considered the father of American democracy. Anyway, we do have a republic. A democracy is the people rule, but historically a democracy has only worked on a citywide level where you personally are there every day to talk politics. And if it gets larger than a city and you're not there every day, it falls apart. A republic is you take care of your family and farm, and you have someone in your place that goes to the market every day and talks politics. They are your representative. They go in your place.
Yeah, so when we get back to this concept then of the republic and of really freedom, you mentioned rightly we get right back to the roots of Scripture. We got these pastors and people with deep religious conviction helping to set the stage here in America. They came out of England, and a lot of this goes back to men like John Locke, but it all goes back to Scripture, doesn't it? It goes back to the concept that there is a God who made us in His image and that all people are important. It's a very rich history, and I wish people had a better sense because, Bill, and I think this is really why you've written these books, when we lose that sense, we lose the an awareness of the warning signs of where we could be heading. What do you see happening in general? Then we'll come back to your book. What do you see happening in general to our country? Are we heading down a dangerous path right now?
Yeah. And one of the illustrations is Israel. And why do I say that? Well, the U.S. Constitution was written. It needed to be ratified by the states. They needed 9 states. They had 8. And New Hampshire was in line to be the 9th, but it was in a deadlock in its ratifying convention. And so Harvard President Samuel Langdon gives an address titled "The Republic of the Israelites, an Example to the American States." He said, "Instead of the 12 tribes of Israel, we may substitute the 13 colonies of the American Union," and he goes on. And so here he gives his sermon. They are convinced. They ratify the Constitution. New Hampshire is the 9th state to ratify it. The U.S. Constitution goes into effect after this sermon, "The Republic of the Israelites, an Example to the American States." What was the Republic of the Israelites? Well, around 1400 B.C., ancient Israel comes out of Egypt. Now, who controlled everything in Egypt? The Pharaoh. He owned the people, the cattle, the land. When ancient Israel came into the Promised Land for those first 400 years, they had no king. Everyone was equal before the law. And the law said there is no respect of persons in judgment. Rich or poor, everyone should be treated the same. There's no royal family to butter up next to. It's literally the beginning of the concept of equality on planet Earth. Ancient Israel is the first nation with private land ownership. All those boring chapters where they did surveys and lots and divided up the land. You see, wherever there's a king, you never really own the land. It is always conditional of you staying on the nice side of the king. You cross the king, he'll take away the land and kill you. Ancient Israel had no police. Everyone was taught the law. Everyone enforced the law. So like everybody was deputized. Ancient Israel had no standing army. You have a king, he has an army to enforce his will. Ancient Israel, every man was in the militia and armed and ready at a moment's notice to defend his family and his community. Ancient Israel had no prisons, not like Egypt where Joseph was wasting away in prison for 3 years. In ancient Israel, when somebody committed a crime, they brought him to the gate to the city. They got the elders together. They had the trial right then and there. And then, of course, there's a city that you could run away to. Ancient Israel had a bureaucracy-free welfare system. So in Egypt, people were selling their souls to the Pharaoh for a handout of grain. In ancient Israel, when somebody harvested their field, they left the gleanings for the poor people to pick through. This way, the poor were taken care of without some political leader collecting everything and doling it back out to those who can help them stay in power. Ancient Israel had a system of honesty, right? God hates unjust weights and measures, and this became a basis for commerce. You could trust people when you're doing business, and ancient Israel got to choose their own leaders of their tribes. And remember Moses spake unto the children of Israel, "How can I alone bear your burden? Take you wise men and understanding and known among your tribes, and I'll make them rulers over you." So he didn't go out among 3 million people and say, you're the leaders. No, he said to the people, "Take you wise men known among your tribes. Bring them to me and I'll recognize them as your leaders." So this was a bottom-up form of government. Instead of it being a king's will forced down on everybody, this was a bottom-up where the individual people were taught the law. It was like they were all running this behavioral software, right? And it's actually a spectrum of power. One side is total government. The other side is no government. Total government, you get a king, a pharaoh, a dictator. The other side of the spectrum is no government. That would be anarchy, unless the people had internal morals. But the question is, why in the world would you follow an internal moral? What would cause you to deny yielding to a selfish temptation? Well, ancient Israel introduced the necessary ingredient, a God who is watching everyone. He wants you to be fair. He will hold you accountable in the future. So you're about to steal. You know you can get away with it because nobody's around. And then you think, God is watching me. He wants me to be fair. He will hold me accountable in the future. Maybe I should hesitate stealing. And it creates something in your head called a conscience. If everybody in the country believes God is watching, he wants me to be fair, he's going to hold me accountable, everybody is motivated to follow these internal morals, and you can have complete order in society with no policemen following everybody around. Maximum liberty. And it only works with the God of the Bible. An Islamic Allah God says there's an infidel woman there, you can rape her, you steal from this infidel, lie to that infidel. Only the God of the Bible says do unto others as you would have them do unto you, be nice to the stranger because you were once a stranger in Egypt. But if you get rid of this God, then all you have is rules. Why follow them? Some will, some won't. The ones that won't are going to yield to their selfish passions and begin to rob, steal, smash windows, set buildings on fire, have mobs in the street and random killings and violence. And then everybody's going to say, government, please step in and restore order. And the government will come in with their militarized police and go house to house and collect everybody's guns. And yeah, they'll restore order. But when the dust settles, you'll have fundamentally transformed your country from the people ruling themselves from the bottom up to a king ruling from the top down.
Bill, would you say as we see some of these trends around us, amazingly so, in this great country, that the problem is not an issue of simply gun control, but heart control, that perhaps we've lost something much deeper than, you know, control on licenses over what kind of firearms we own? We've lost our moral underpinnings found in the spiritual values under which this country was launched. This rich, rich history, as you point out, 6,000 years of history. And if we want to find a civilization like this, we kind of have to go back to ancient Israel, a theocracy. I mean, that's amazing. So tell us, how have we gotten to where we are today as we're watching these shootings? And it's happening so regularly now. It's amazing.
No, I wouldn't define ancient Israel as a theocracy because, again, the first 400 years, it's a bottom-up rule. It's each individual person individually accountable to God and individually accountable to enforce the law. And so you would have the people would hear somebody blaspheming God, and they would say, I heard this. And so it was the people individually enforcing. It wasn't a Shah with his religious police going around beating people and cutting off arms and legs. So I use the term a republic. But what happened in Israel? When the priests stopped teaching the law, it fell apart. And so each of us have this selfish fallen nature. It's like every kid is born with selfish. Every computer you buy is preloaded with a virus, and you have to immediately take it to some computer tech and have them clean it off. Every kid is born with this selfish virus, goes back to the fall in the garden, and Israel would take the kid to the Levite and say, recode him. And the Levite would say, okay, you want to steal, don't steal. You want to lie, don't lie. You want to commit adultery, don't commit adultery. God's watching, he's going to hold you accountable. And it worked as long as the priest taught it. When the priest in Israel stopped teaching the law, here's Eli, the high priest. His own sons are sleeping with women in the tent of meeting. He's not teaching the law anymore. He's not even to his own kids. There's a Levite in the tribe of Dan who has a graven image, and the tribe takes him and says, you can be a priest for our whole tribe, and you're scratching your head thinking, what's this Levite doing with a graven image? Isn't that one of the commandments? He's not living the law. Another story, Levite with a concubine. The law says the Levite's to marry a virgin of his own tribe. Here he is with a woman he's not married to. He's traveling. They're in a house surrounded by sodomites. They bang on the door. He shoves her out. She gets raped and dies. He cuts her body in 12 pieces, sends it to the 12 tribes. They come together and kill the sodomites. And by the time you're grossed out, you read this line that says, every man did what was right in their own eyes. Why? Because the priests had stopped teaching them the law and what was right in God's eyes. And so they all go to Samuel, and they say, this isn't working. Samuel cries, and the Lord tells him, they have not rejected thee, but they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them. And so Samuel says, okay, you want a king? You'll get a king. He'll take away your best land, take away your daughters, make them be cooks. And anyway, so America's founders look back to ancient Israel, and it works as long as the pastors are teaching the law and as long as the people are involved. And so the question I ask is, who is the king in America? people say, well, it's the president. Well, no. Signer of the Constitution, Gouverneur Morris, said the magistrate is not the king. The people are the king. Chief Justice John Jay said the people are the sovereign of this country. Abraham Lincoln said the people of these United States are the rightful masters of both Congresses and courts. Signer of the Constitution, James Wilson, said sovereignty resides in the people. They have not parted with it. So this is where we're at. In America, the people are the king. I use an illustration. Imagine you're visiting an Old Testament king, and you're walking through the streets of Jerusalem, and you're seeing murder, rape, crime, and you get into the king's chamber. And he looks at you and says, did you see all that crime coming in here? I wish somebody would fix it. And you, like, reach over, tap him on the shoulder, say, excuse me, you're the king. This is your kingdom. You're the one accountable to God to fix it. That's like somebody in America watching TV, seeing all the terrible stuff going on, saying, I wish somebody would fix it. Hello, reach through the TV tube and through the radio speaker and tap you on the shoulder. You're the king. You are the one accountable to God to fix this mess. Romans 13, every authority is set up by God. Well, God allowed our founders to set it up so that the people are the authority, very similar to the Republic of Israel. And so we not only have the right to vote, we're going to be held accountable to God for what happens. Hmm. And so it gets more serious.
Hmm. Very good, Bill. So what you're saying is, first of all, the parallels, if we look back to Israel, are more striking than we may realize, because even though God was maybe following them with a cloud and a pillar and more obvious than today, he's with us. We have his word. You use the word law. We have his teachings. We have his instruction. And if we neglect them, we're going to go the way of all the societies in the past. Is that right? We're going to find ourselves into a moral collapse and some leader taking things over with absolute power. Is that kind of what you're warning us about in this first volume?
Right. And you look at other countries and philosophers. So in times of crises, people will surrender some of their rights and freedoms to someone who promises to quickly solve the crises. And even the Roman Republic noticed this, that they had a republic, right? They had 600 senators. But if they were being attacked from another country, they created a position called a temporary dictator, where for 1 year, this one person was in charge of the country because they realized they had to respond quickly if we're under a war. So even Romans realized in times of crises, power has to concentrate. And so you throw into this mix, not only is there a gravitational pull of selfishness for someone to want to concentrate power, there's philosophers that want to speed it along. So 500 years ago, Italy was a bunch of city-states that always fought. A guy named Machiavelli thought if one prince could control all of Italy, it would stop the infighting. So he writes a book called The Prince, where he advocates the ends justifies the means. The end of one prince controlling all of Italy is such a good end that any means necessary to get there is justified. Lie, cheat, steal. So if a prince conquers a city, they would hate him. But if the prince pays criminals to kill cows and burn barns and create crisis and terror, domestic chaos, the people would cry out for help. The prince would come in and dispatch with the very people that he bribed, and nobody would know the better for it, and they'd all praise the prince as a hero. So it's actually good marketing. You create the need and fill it. You go around the back of the house and set it on fire. Then you go around the front of the house and sell them a fire extinguisher. And they'll pay anything for it and thank you for being there. So it's called Machiavellianism, where you create or capitalize on crises in order to consolidate control back into the hands of a king.
So we've got to really watch our attitudes as we look toward a presidential election and all the others that are being elected. Bill, I would think we need to be wise and acknowledge everyone should go to the polls, even if you're having a hard time picking a president, you know. There are a lot of other people who are being voted into power. I'm quoting from your book, and to the listener, we're talking about the book Change to Chains. And we've got William J. Federer on air with us. And this is really going to be the closing question because of our time. But you quote Ronald Reagan back in 1985 saying, government that is big enough to give you everything you want is more likely to simply take everything you've got. That says a lot, doesn't it, about the people giving up their rights as king and losing their rights altogether over time. Can you give us a closing thought?
Yeah, William Henry Harrison was in charge of the Indian Territory, and he was fighting Indians. And Thomas Jefferson writes him a letter and says there's an easier way to take land from the Indians instead of fighting them. He says sell them stuff on credit, and when their debt gets beyond what they can pay, they'll willingly cancel the debt by a cessation of their lands. So in other words, sell them stuff, say, oh, you can pay later. Then you show up one day and say, you owe all of this money, and their jaw drop, and you say, tell you what, we'll just take all the land from here to the river, call it even. And so there's two ways to conquer. You can come in with an army and conquer, or you can get everybody in debt. And how do you get them in debt? You get them dependent on government handouts and government welfare and government contracts and government health care. And once everybody's dependent on it, then if the thought is you're not going to have it anymore, it's like, oh, I can't live without the government. Oh, okay, whatever the government needs me to do. Okay, take the chip. I mean, whatever. I'll do it because I want to. And so you build this dependency. It's the way drug dealers take over a neighborhood. They can come in and kill people, or they can give you free drugs for a while and get you hooked, and then they got you. So giving people stuff and getting them dependent is a way of conquering. It's just a back doorway.
So we really need to search our own hearts even before we go to the polls, and to recognize that prayer is so vital right now as our country needs a spiritual awakening. Bill Federer, thank you for coming on the air with us and helping to open our eyes. To the listeners, again, we've been talking about his book, Changed to Chains. There's a two-part, actually, series, and The Rise of the Tyrant is the name of the second book, and that will be our focus next week. God bless you, Bill, and have a good week. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.
This has been Beyond Words with Dr. William Campbell. Beyond Words is a ministry of Scripture Awakening. And if you'd like to help support this ministry, or if you would like to know more about Beyond Words, visit us on our website at scriptureawakening.com.